Chapter 10. Tie in, and possibly cause some startling trouble. Besides, I was anxious to take the wheel, the man in pink pajamas showing himself a hopeless duffer at the business. This I did directly the simple funeral was over. We were going half speed, keeping right in the middle of the stream, and I listened to the talk about me. They had given up Kurtz, they had given up the station. Kurtz was dead, and the station had been burned, and so on and so on. The red-haired pilgrim was beside himself with the thought that at least this poor Kurtz had been properly revenged. Say, we must have made a glorious slaughter of them in the bush. Eh? What do you think? Say? Apostrophe he positively danced, the bloodthirsty little gingery beggar. And he had nearly fainted when he saw the wounded man. I could not help saying, you made a glorious lot of smoke, anyhow. ... I had seen, from the way the tops of the bushes rustled and flew, that almost all the shots had gone too high. You can't hit anything, unless you take aim and fire from the shoulder. But these chaps fired from the hip with their eyes shut. The retreat, I maintained and I was right, was caused by the screeching of the steam whistle. Upon this they forgot Kurtz, and began to howl at me with indignant protests. The manager stood by the wheel murmuring confidentially about the necessity of getting well away down the river before dark at all events, when I saw in the distance a clearing on the riverside, and the outlines of some sort of building. What's this? ... I asked. He clapped his hands in wonder. The station! ... he cried. I etched in at once, still going half speed. Through my glasses I saw the slope of a hill interspersed with rare trees, and perfectly free from undergrowth. A long decaying building on the summit was half buried in the high grass. The large holes in the peaked roof gaped black from afar. The jungle and the woods made a background. There was no enclosure or fence of any kind. But there had been one apparently, for near the house half a dozen slim posts remained in a row, roughly trimmed, and with their upper ends ornamented with round carved balls. The rails, or whatever there had been between, had disappeared. Of course the forest surrounded all that. The river bank was clear, and on the water side I saw a white man under a hat like a cartwheel beckoning persistently with his whole arm. Examining the edge of the forest above and below, I was almost certain I could see movements, human forms gliding here and there. I steamed past prudently, then stopped the engines, and let her drift down. The man on the shore began to shout, urging us to land. We have been attacked, ... screamed the manager. I know, I know. It's all right, ... yelled back the other, as cheerful as you please. Come along. It's all right. I am glad. ... His aspect reminded me of something I had seen, something funny I had seen somewhere. As I maneuvered to get alongside, I was asking myself, what does this fellow look like? ... Suddenly I got it. He looked like a harlequin. His clothes had been made of some stuff that was brown holland probably, but it was covered with patches all over, with bright patches, blue, red, and yellow, patches on the back, patches on front, patches on elbows, on knees, colored binding round his jacket, scarlet edging at the bottom of his trousers. And the sunshine made him look extremely gay and wonderfully neat withal, because you could see how beautifully all this patching had been done. A beardless, boyish face, very fair, no features to speak of, nose peeling, little blue eyes, smiles, and frowns chasing each other over that open countenance like sunshine and shadow on a windswept plain. Look out, Captain! ... he cried. There's a snag lodged in here last night. ... What? Another snag? I confess I swore shamefully. I had nearly holed my cripple to finish off that charming trip. The Harold Quinn on the bank turned his little pug nose up to me. You English? ... he asked, all smiles. Are you? ... I shouted from the wheel. The smiles vanished, and he shook his head, as if sorry for my disappointment. Then he brightened up. Never mind. Apostrophe E cried encouragingly. Are we in time? Apostrophe I asked. He is up there, he replied, with a toss of the head up the hill, and becoming gloomy all of a sudden. His face was like the autumn sky, overcast one moment and bright the next. When the manager, escorted by the pilgrims, all of them armed to the teeth, had gone to the house, this chap came on board. I say, I don't like this. These natives are in the bush, apostrophe I said. He assured me earnestly it was all right. They are simple people, apostrophe he added. Well, I am glad you came. It took me all my time to keep them off. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but you said it was all right, apostrophe I cried. Oh, they meant no harm, apostrophe he said. And as I stared he corrected himself, not exactly. Apostrophe, apostrophe, then vivaciously, my faith, your pilot house wants a clean up. Apostrophe, apostrophe, in the next breath he advised me to keep enough steam on the boiler to blow the whistle in case of any trouble. One good screech will do more for you than all your rifles. They are simple people, apostrophe he repeated. He rattled away at such a rate he quite overwhelmed me. He seemed to be trying to make up for lots of silence, and actually hinted, laughing, that such was the case. Don't you talk with Mr. Kurtz? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I said. You don't talk with that man, you listen to him, apostrophe, he exclaimed with severe exultation. But now, apostrophe, he waved his arm, and in the twinkling of an eye, was in the uttermost depths of despondency. In a moment he came up again with a jump, possessed himself of both my hands, shook them continuously, while he gabbled. Brother sailor. Dot dot honor. Dot dot pleasure. Dot 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 delight. Dot 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 introduce myself. Dot dot Russian. Dot 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 son of an archpriest. Dot 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 government of Tambov. Dot 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 what? Tobacco. English tobacco. The excellent English tobacco. Now, that's brotherly. Smoke? Where's a sailor that does not smoke? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the pipe soothed him, and gradually I made out he had run away from school, had gone to sea in a Russian ship, ran away again, served some time in English ships, was now reconciled with the archpriest. He made a point of that. But when one is young, one must see things, gather experience, ideas, enlarge the mind. Apostrophe, apostrophe here. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I interrupted. You can never tell. Here I have met Mr. Kurtz, apostrophe he said, youthfully solemn and reproachful. I held my tongue after that. It appears he had persuaded a Dutch trading house on the coast to fit him out with stores and goods, and had started for the interior with a light heart and no more idea of what would happen to him than a baby. He had been wandering about that river for nearly 2 years alone, cut off from everybody and everything. I am not so young as I look. I am 25, apostrophe he said. At first old Van Schuyten would tell me to go to the devil, apostrophe he narrated with keen enjoyment. But I stuck to him, and talked, till at last he got afraid I would talk the hind leg off his favorite dog. So he gave me some cheap things and a few guns, and told me he hoped he would never see my face again. Good old Dutchman, Van Schuyten. I've sent him one small lot of ivory a year ago, so that he can't call me a little thief when I get back. I hope he got it. And for the rest I don't care. I had some wood stacked for you. That was my old house. Did you see? Apostrophe, I gave him Tosin's book. He made as though he would kiss me, but restrained himself. The only book I had left, and I thought I had lost it, apostrophe he said, looking at it ecstatically. So many accidents happen to a man going about alone, you know. Canoes get upset sometimes and sometimes you've got to clear out so quick, when the people get angry. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he thumbed the pages. You made notes in Russian? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I asked. He nodded. I thought they were written in cipher, apostrophe, I said. He laughed, then became serious. I had lots of trouble to keep these people off, apostrophe, he said. Did they want to kill you? " I asked. "Oh no!" " he cried, and checked himself. "Why did they attack us?" " I pursued. He hesitated, then said shamefacedly, "They don't want him to go." " don't they?" " I said, curiously. He nodded a nod full of mystery and wisdom. "I tell you," " he cried, "this man has enlarged my mind." " he opened his arms wide, staring at me with his little blue eyes that were perfectly round. "Three," I looked at him, lost in astonishment. There he was before me, in motley, as though he had absconded from a troupe of mimes, enthusiastic, fabulous. His very existence was improbable, inexplicable, and Delto Jeter bewildering. He was an insoluble problem. It was inconceivable how he had existed, how he had succeeded in getting so far, how he had managed to remain, why he did not instantly disappear. I went a little farther, " he said, then still a little farther till I had gone so far that I don't know how I'll ever get back. Never mind. Plenty time. I can manage. You take Kurtz away quick, I tell you. " The glamour of youth enveloped his particular drags, his destitution, his loneliness, the essential desolation of his feudal wanderings. For months, for years, his life hadn't been worth a day's purchase, and there he was gallantly, thoughtlessly alive, to all appearance indestructible solely by the virtue of his few years, and of his unreflecting audacity. I was seduced into something like admiration, like envy. Glamour urged him on, glamour kept him unscathed. He surely wanted nothing from the wilderness, but space to breathe in, and to push on through. His need was to exist, and to move onwards at the greatest possible risk, and with a maximum of privation. If the absolutely pure, uncalculating, unpractical spirit of adventure had ever ruled a human being, it ruled this bepatched youth. I almost envied him the possession of this modest and clear flame. It seemed to have consumed all thought of self so completely, that, even while he was talking to you, you forgot that it was he, the man before your eyes, who had gone through these things. I did not envy him his devotion to Kurtz, though. He had not meditated over it. It came to him, and he accepted it with a sort of eager fatalism. I must say that to me, it appeared about the most dangerous thing in every way he had come upon so far. They had come together unavoidably, like two ships becalmed near each other, and lay rubbing sides at last. I suppose Kurtz wanted an audience, because on a certain occasion, when encamped in the forest, they had talked all night, or more probably Kurtz had talked. "We talked of everything," he said, quite transported at the recollection. "I forgot there was such a thing as sleep. The night did not seem to last an hour. Everything. Everything. Of love too. He talked to you of love." I said, much amused. "It isn't what you think," he cried, almost passionately. "It was in general. He made me see things. " he threw his arms up. "We were on deck at the time, and the headman of my woodcutters, lounging nearby, turned upon him his heavy and glittering eyes. I looked around, and I don't know why, but I assure you that never, never before, did this land, this river, this jungle, the very arch of this blazing sky, appear to me so hopeless and so dark, so impenetrable to human thought, so pitiless to human weakness. And, ever since, you have been with him, of course?" I said. "On the contrary. It appears their intercourse had been very much broken by various causes. He had, as he informed me proudly, managed to nurse Kurtz through two illnesses. He alluded to it as he would to some risky feat, but as a rule Kurtz wandered alone far in the depths of the forest. Very often coming to this station, I had to wait days and days before he would turn up," he said. "Ah, it was worth waiting for, sometimes." What was he doing? Exploring, or what? I asked. Oh yes, of course. Apostrophe he had discovered lots of villages, a lake too he did not know exactly in what direction. It was dangerous to inquire too much, but mostly his expeditions had been for ivory. But he had no goods to trade with by that time, apostrophe I objected. There's a good lot of cartridges left even yet, apostrophe he answered, looking away. To speak plainly, he raided the country, apostrophe I said. He nodded. Not alone, surely. Apostrophe he muttered something about the villages round that lake. Kurtz got the tribe to follow him, did he? Apostrophe I suggested. He fidgeted a little. They adored him, apostrophe he said. The tone of these words was so extraordinary that I looked at him searchingly. It was curious to see his mingled eagerness and reluctance to speak of Kurtz. The man filled his life, occupied his thoughts, swayed his emotions. What can you expect? Apostrophe he burst out. He came to them with thunder and lightning, you know, and they had never seen anything like it and very terrible. He could be very terrible. You can't judge Mr. Kurtz as you would an ordinary man. No. Now just to give you an idea, I don't mind telling you, he wanted to shoot me too one day, but I don't judge him. Apostrophe shoot you. Apostrophe I cried. What for? Apostrophe well, I had a small lot of ivory the chief of that village near my house gave me. You see, I used to shoot game for them. Well, he wanted it, and wouldn't hear reason. He declared he would shoot me, unless I gave him the ivory, and then cleared out of the country, because he could do so, and had a fancy for it, and there was nothing on earth to prevent him killing whom he jolly well pleased. And it was true too. I gave him the ivory. What did I care? But I didn't clear out. No. I couldn't leave him. I had to be careful, of course, till we got friendly again for a time. He had his second illness then. Afterwards I had to keep out of the way, but I didn't mind. He was living for the most part in those villages on the lake. When he came down to the river, sometimes he would take to me, and sometimes it was better for me to be careful. This man suffered too much. He hated all this, and somehow he couldn't get away. When I had a chance I begged him to try and leave while there was time. I offered to go back with him. And he would say yes, and then he would remain, go off on another ivory hunt, disappear for weeks. Forget himself amongst these people, forget himself, you know. Apostrophe why? He's mad, apostrophe I said. He protested indignantly. Mr. Kurtz couldn't be mad. If I had heard him talk, only 2 days ago, I wouldn't dare hint at such a thing. ... I had taken up my binoculars, while we talked, and was looking at the shore, sweeping the limit of the forest at each side, and at the back of the house. The consciousness of there being people in that bush, so silent, and quiet as the ruined house on the hill made me uneasy. There was no sign on the face of nature of this amazing tale, that was not so much told as suggested to me in desolate exclamations, completed by shrugs, in interrupted phrases, in hints ending in deep sighs. The woods were unmoved, like a mask heavy, like the closed door of a prison they looked with their air of hidden knowledge, of patient expectation, of unapproachable silence. The Russian was explaining to me that it was only lately that Mr. Kurtz had come. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.